Thanks, Ben. Thank you to the conference organizers for giving me an opportunity to speak about this today. This morning I'll be speaking to you about some trends in late diagnosis of HIV among gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men, based on some data out of Melbourne from the Access Surveillance Project. So following on a little bit from Martin's talk, with a lot of the focus being around the 95-95-95 goals, much of that is around trying to minimize the proportion of individuals living with HIV that are undiagnosed. And some of the main drivers for that are due to the fact that we know that this is a period of time with increased transmission risk, but also late diagnosis tends to result in delays in accessing treatment and care, and can increase morbidity for the individual. So in Victoria, our latest strategy, unsurprisingly, has picked up the 95-95-95 goals as well, with a major priority area for action being increased testing frequency to help drive down the proportion of undiagnosed HIV in the state. Over the last 10 years or so, we've seen some novel strategies being implemented in the state to try to encourage gay and bisexual men to increase their frequency of testing, increase their annual testing uptake. And this goes back to as far as 2013 with the introduction of Thorn Harbor Health's community-based rapid testing service, Pronto, but also changes to clinical practice, which have seen simplified results provision where gay and bisexual men no longer need to go into a clinic to get the results. We see SMS commonly used in practice. Thorn Harbor Health and other community organizations continue to drive home the message of the importance of frequent testing through social marketing campaigns like the classic Stop the Drama Down Under with Frank in his undies. And more recently, while uptake may have been limited to date, we've seen the approval of the HIV self-testing kit by Atomo. But probably far and wide, the intervention that has probably most radically changed testing uptake among gay men has been the rollout of PrEP, starting with the Vic PrEP trial in 2014, then moving to PrEPX, which saw many more men in the community being able to access PrEP, and more recently with the listing under the PBS. So how are we tracking? So I took this data, it's a little old now, from the Fast Track Cities project, and what we can see, going slightly backwards, we're doing really well in terms of the proportion of PLHIV that are on ART that are virally suppressed. We're doing pretty well with the proportion of people living with HIV that are diagnosed that are on ART. But the continued hurdle for us really is about the people that are living with HIV but are unaware of their infection. So let's take a step back and see how things are going in Victoria more broadly when it comes to the HIV epidemic. And what we can see over the last 10 years is that from 2008 to 2016, we saw a gradual incline in the number of notifications per year from 260 to 320. And encouragingly, since then, we've started to see a steady decline to 258 to year's end in 2018. But what do we know about the recency of the infection and how timely diagnosis is occurring? Looking at the passive notification data from Victoria, we can look at the proportion of new infections per year that are newly acquired, which newly acquired is defined as having an HIV test in the previous 12 months, which may be an indication of either seroconversion or perhaps more routine testing among the individual. But there are some challenges with using passive data to look at recency of or timeliness of diagnosis because it relies on having testing history. We know recently there have been changes in the reporting of Western blot, which makes interpreting newly diagnosed or unspecified a little bit more challenging. And in Victoria, the completeness of CD4 data at diagnosis was relatively patchy pre-2017. So working on Access with a plethora of data in front of us, we thought we can look at this. So our objective was to assess trends in the proportion of new diagnoses among gay and bisexual men in Victoria that are late, and examine whether those individuals that are diagnosed late differ in their time to achieving viral suppression when compared to those that are diagnosed not late. And I'll continue to use not late instead of early, because I don't want to imply that these are early diagnoses, but work with me. So what did we do? I'm sure many of you would be aware of ACCESS by now, but if you're not, it stands for the Australian Collaboration for Coordinated Enhanced Sentinel Surveillance. So I'm going to use ACCESS because it's a lot quicker. But it's a national sentinel surveillance system that looks at HIV, viral hepatitis, and primarily bacterial STIs, namely chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. It routinely extracts de-identified data from a range of clinical services, both general practice, sexual health, and hospital, in addition to pathology labs across the country. And though the data is de-identified, we use the Granite data extraction tool, which allows us to link an individual across service. So if they attend more than one clinical service or lab within ACCESS, we'll be able to monitor their testing frequency, their testing history across all of the participating sites. So what we used were linked HIV diagnostic, CD4, and viral load tests extracted from all 13 clinical services in Victoria. But when we talk about the analysis today, the inclusion criteria were gay and bisexual men that were diagnosed at 4 clinics. These are 3 high caseload general practices and 1 peer-led community HIV testing service. And these are diagnoses that happened between January 2013 and December 2018. In order to be included, they had to have evidence of a CD4 test result within any clinical service in ACCESS within 90 days of diagnosis. And we chose CD4 within any clinic in case they did get referred to a practice outside of the high caseloads for care afterwards. For the analysis regarding time to viral suppression, they obviously needed to have a viral load result following their diagnosis. For the definition of our outcome of late diagnosis, we define that as a CD4 result of less than 350 without any evidence of a negative HIV test in the previous 12 months to their diagnosis. We described an annual proportion of new diagnoses that were late and the median CD4 at diagnosis over time. And we assessed the trend in late diagnosis over time using Poisson tests for trend. And then we calculated the median time in days from HIV diagnosis to achieving a viral load result of less than 200 copies. We then assessed the difference between groups using Fisher's exact test. So what do we find? In the 4 clinics over between 2013 and 2018, we had 308 confirmed new diagnoses. Of those, 304, or 99%, had a CD4 result within 90 days. And of those, 264, roughly 87%, had a viral load results following the diagnosis. When we looked at some basic characteristics between those that were diagnosed late, they compared pretty well in terms of age distribution to those diagnosed not late. However, they tended to be more likely to be born overseas. And when we looked at countries of birth, the most common region was Asia. With regards to late diagnoses, they were more commonly occurring in community-based services, namely Pronto. So trends over time, unfortunately, was a little bouncing around back and forth, but what we care about here is the red line. And as a proportion, we're seeing a relatively stable trend in the proportion of diagnoses that are late. The trend over time here was not significant. And when we look at the median CD4 at diagnosis over this period, unsurprisingly, that also remains relatively stable around 500 cells. But how are those that are diagnosed late faring in terms of achieving viral suppression once they're diagnosed? So to do this, we looked at the median time in days from diagnosis to viral suppression. So let's start with those that are diagnosed not late, because I think this is a really good story. And that's the blue line here, and we see that over time, there's been a significant downward trend in the median number of days from diagnosis to viral suppression. However, those in the red line have been relatively stable. There's a bit of kicking up and down here, but that's primarily driven because in the last 2 years of the analysis, we have far fewer new diagnoses in the data set. What I think is happening here is that typically those that are late diagnoses are likely being encouraged due to their low CD4 count to initiate treatment even early on. However, those that were not late diagnoses in the earlier years may not have been as highly recommended to start treatment at the time of diagnosis. But now in the final point, we're seeing relatively low time to viral suppression among both groups. So what does this all mean? So we've got late diagnosis being far more common among gay and bisexual men born overseas and far more common in community or public services. This may be suggestive of structural or financial barriers to accessing routine and frequent testing among this group. And this mirrors a lot of what we've seen in other research, primarily among Asian-born MSM in Melbourne, Sydney, and in another presentation happening next door, even in Perth, where Asian MSM are appearing late and typically being diagnosed more likely in public sexual health services. So I think we need to be constantly thinking of innovative models of care and thinking of targeted community health promotion to remove barriers and, more importantly, increase knowledge and awareness and motivation for routine and frequent testing among this group. The good news story, I think, is that though we've got some persistent late diagnoses, these individuals are still achieving viral suppression at a similar pace to those that are diagnosed not late. But I think that points back to the earlier issue of the first step of the 95-95-95 being a place that we need to focus a lot of our attention on. More importantly, I think the clinical network that we're talking about here is high caseload clinics and services targeted to gay and bisexual men, clinically community engaged, and are quite generally engaged in sexual health portion of the community. But we know that increases in HIV testing increases in HIV testing among gay and bisexual men in Melbourne. But when we look at access data from these same clinics, the increases are primarily being driven by gay and bisexual men on PrEP. Whereas if you look at these men here, even annual testing, we're not seeing very good movement in this group. And while they may be lower risk and that might be their motivation for not being on PrEP, we still should be seeing some movement in at least an annual screen for HIV. Finally, we know that late diagnosis is far more likely to occur outside of high caseload clinics, and in Victoria, we're seeing an increase in diagnoses in these clinics in low caseload. So I think we need to be ensuring that our testing strategies are keeping this in mind, are keeping in mind that gay and bisexual men not on PrEP need to have strong messaging about routine testing, and that we need to be focusing on removing the additional barriers for Asian or other men born overseas. Thank you. Some final acknowledgements before I move on, because it's not just me working on access, sorry. Hold your applause. Just a final thank you to all the clinics that participate in access, and more importantly, to every patient within the Access Clinical Network that allow us to use their data for these analyses. It's really important work. And we receive funding from the Australian Department of Health, the Department of Health here in WA and Victoria and New South Wales. Thank you.